Room, the B.B. King Blues Room, the James Baldwin Library, just to name a few. Join me Friday nights from 7 until 10 p.m. as I take you on a musical journey you'll never forget. Robin's Place.
Come the day you're mine, I'm gonna teach you to fly.
I'm Weezy Muntali, host of African Now, and you're tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington.
Welcome to Community Watch and Comment for Tuesday, October 27th. I'm Dave Rabin, joined by my co-host, Larry Stafford. It's great to be with you folks. Good show for you today, I do believe. Coming up, Vice President Kamala Harris has the support of the vast majority of Black voters, but she still significantly trails President Biden's 2020 share of that vital Democratic constituency. Why aren't Black voters more enthusiastic about Harris? We'll speak with the People for the American Way's National Political Director, Marcus Batchelor, and Trump's running mate, J.D. Vance, is under the quiet influence of Curtis Yarvin, an arguably racist blogger. Yarvin asserts that the U.S. needs to move beyond democracy and embrace monarchy. Really quite startling. This guy has the ear of a potential vice president of the United States. We'll speak with the Nation magazine's DC bureau chief, Chris Layman. But first, as you undoubtedly might aware of, you're listening to our airwaves. We are in fundraising mode, and we need you to step up and show the love. Are you with us, Larry Stafford?
Yes, I'm here, and I am ready. Excellent. To feel the love as
you,
well.
Are you ready? Are you really ready to feel it, Larry?
I am. I'm very ready to feel love today on the air from our listeners, who I know are gonna, you know, be giving, you know, all they can today.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, these are tight times. I understand that. Just shopping less. Night. I mean, there's just no question. Prices have jacked up. The God Almighty dollar can be difficult to obtain, but there are those of you out there that I think can show the love, and we need you to show it. This is a labor for love for Larry and me, and for most of the programmers. I think maybe virtually all the programmers that you hear, we're not paid. You know, if you're given to this beloved community resource, WPFW, you're getting a good bang for your buck, because most of us, we're volunteers. We do it because we care about the community. We enjoy getting good stories to you. We enjoy getting extraordinarily wonderful music, and it's all commercial free. And why are you doing this, Larry? Why are you joining us today?
Well, because the other aspect of the station that is so important to me, and I hope it's so important to our listeners, is that this is community-owned radio. So when you're giving to WPFW, you're not just a donor that is just donating some money and then there's a cause that, or an organization that runs off and just does whatever. Like, you're investing in a news organization, a radio station that is ultimately owned by you, the listener. Not by major corporations, big advertisers, you know. And so that's why all the programming you hear on WPFW is so different, because it is driven by what our members and listeners want.
Yep.
So that's why I'm so excited about this drive.
Well put, sir. Well put. We want to get on to the programming we have for you today, which I think is vital and important. I think you'll be engaged. Please chime in The number to call to donate, 202-588-9739. You can go online. Probably the easiest way to do it, wpfwfm.org. We've got a PayPal option on our website. You can do Cash App if you like, $WPFWFM. And we got a $500 goal. We need your help very, very much so in this time when we're looking to move by the end of the year. So please show the love. We need sustainers. We need new members. Please step up and support this vital resource, this vital asset to the community, WPFWFM.org. And let's go on with the show. Vice President Kamala Harris has the support of the vast majority of Black voters, but she still significantly trails President Biden, 2020 chair of that vital Democratic constituency. And we share a vital constituency in this household with dogs. So it goes that according to a recent New York Times Siena College poll of Black likely voters, nearly 80% of Black voters nationwide said they would vote for Ms. Harris. It sounds like a lot, but Biden won 90% of Black voters to capture the White House in 2020. He did that barely. And the 10% drop off for Ms. Harris, if it holds, is a large enough amount to imperil her chances of winning key battleground states. We're talking about a razor thin difference here in this election on November 5th that's going on right now, of course, with early voting. Why aren't Black voters more enthusiastic about Harris? And in particular, why is there a gender gap in the Black vote? As former President Obama pointed out recently, with Black men less likely to support Harris than Black women. What's that about? And joining us to dive into the whys and wherefores of these important questions is People for the American Way's National Political Director, Marcus Batchelor. He has an opinion piece on this issue in yesterday's The Hill website, a very popular website on The Hill and around the city and around the country. Marcus Batchelor, welcome to Community Watch and Comment. It's great to have you.
David, great to be with you, and always to my brother Larry, we go way back. Glad to be here on DC's home of jazz and justice.
Oh, wonderful. It's great that you guys have a connection. Terrific. We would love to hear from listeners. We don't have a lot of time, but it'd be great if you chime in, if you have a brief, a comment, question, particularly if you're on the fence with Ms. Harris. 202-588-0893, different number than the fundraising number, 202-588-0893. We want to get to Marcus Batchelor's column, which is entitled Black Men Want Real Change. Only Kamala Harris can offers it. But first, let's dive into some of the findings from the recent New York Times Siena College poll. I think they're important to note. And they don't need to necessarily be refuted, but I think it's important to realize some of the concerns that Black voters have in this country, particularly on the eve of the election. There's the belief that the Democratic Party has failed to deliver on promises. Now, get this, folks, 40% of African-American voters, male and female, we're talking here, under 30, said the Republican Party was more likely to follow through on its campaign commitments than Democrats were. Marcus, your thoughts about that?
Yeah, well, I think first and foremost, I think that the Biden-Harris administration has made tremendous progress over the last 3.5 years. You know, if you remember where we were 4 years ago, in the throes of a pandemic, you know, in an economic downturn. Just a year ago, most media was predicting that the economy would slide into a very deep recession over the next several months. We're now over a year from that prediction, and the economy is still growing. But I think, you know, what we're seeing as a result of these polls is a clear acknowledgement that some members of the American family, right, some communities aren't feeling that progress as closely quickly as others, and that there's still more work to do to make sure that all of the work that we've done to make the fundamentals of the economy strong, right, to safeguard our democracy hold, and that people can feel them. And so whether it's things like the economy, we've got to make sure that, people's costs come down, and that they're able to raise their kids and afford a house and, invest in a business and do all of those things at the same time. When it comes to our democracy, right, we can't just ask Black voters to vote every 4 years. We have to protect their vote with the passage of the For the People Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act and things like DC statehood.
Right. So but this poll is talking about, I understand what needs to be done. I understand how, certain, perhaps you and I or whoever perceives things, but 40% of African-American voters under 30 think the Republican Party is more likely to follow through on their commitments than the Democrats are. I mean, it's a startling number to me.
Yeah, well, I think we've got to make the Democratic Party has to make two real distinctions in the closing days of this campaign. In that, the first is that the Democrats have advanced real solutions to the problems in people's lives. What has happened is obstruction from Republicans, whether it's been in Congress or at the courts or at the state levels, where, and especially in states where, the Republicans have a trifecta, where a vast majority of Black voters actually live in America, right? That has an impact. So we need to explain that. But we also need to not take our foot off the gas and, quite frankly, be more aggressive about the values that we're trying to advance, which is why I'm happy that the vice president has advanced a focused agenda on opportunity for Black men, right? Has talked about how she's going to, help the sandwich generation. All these very specific things are going to help bring people along. But, it's the shortest presidential campaign probably in American history. And so we still got work to do in the closing days.
Yeah. We'd love to hear from callers. Try and sneak you in here. 202-588-0893. Particularly interested if you feel like you're someone on the fence in terms of who you're going to vote for, be it Harris or Trump or maybe somebody else. So please chime in if you care to. 202-588-0893. Let's move on. We've got a lot of ground to cover. Let's move on to the gender gap. And of course, there's a gender gap across the board. It's not just amongst Black voters, but 83% of Black women say they're going to vote for Harris. We're talking about, actually voting. So you got 83% of Black women, 70% of Black men voting for Harris. So that's a 13% gap. And we should say that 70% of Black men say they're going to vote for Harris. Biden got 85% in 2020. Former President Obama was talking about this, saying Black men just aren't feeling the idea of having a woman as president. So we got sexism alive and well here in our Black community and across the board, of course. Your thoughts, Marcus?
Sure. I think it's important to acknowledge that sexism exists. And I think men having those conversations with other men across communities, whether it's in the Black community or wherever else, is important in these closing days. I think when we think about folks who've been in this organizing work a long time and missed the opportunity in 2016 to elect a woman to the White House, in part because we didn't have those conversations, I think it's particularly important that we as a Democratic coalition have them. But I don't think that is the most pervasive, issue. I think, like you said, north of 70% of Black men say right now that they're going to support Harris. And other polls done by Howard University, you see that number go above 80% for likely Black male voters. And so I think what you're going to see is the coalition of Black men hold generally to what it's done for previous Democratic coalitions. But I think there's an acknowledgement that young men in particular, whether they're Black or white, or Latino are have a waning faith in our institutions. And Donald Trump as a candidate and as a figure has done a good job at channeling the angst and anger and disaffection with our institutions that really does bring people to his side. So we have to, in the closing days, again, explain to men, black men in particular, these institutions can work, that, you know, this woman has a plan to improve our lives, and that's why it's worth investing in. A lot of people have supported Donald Trump because they want to blow the system up, right? But what we're seeing is that black men, especially compared to the abysmally low numbers of white men who are going to support the Democratic nominee, have faith in our institutions and they invest in them election after election.
Yep. We have a couple of callers. It's terrific. First caller, your name, if you like, where you're calling from, and your question or comment. And please make it brief. We're short on time.
I'm calling from Southeast D.C. I've already voted, and I wrote in Jill Stein. I think your analysis is, like, way off. People, black men are not voting or don't feel much love for Kamala Harris, not because she's a woman. It's because she's a Democrat. And I never vote for Republicans or Democrats for presidential elections. The only time I did was my first time I voted when I turned 21 in 76. I think your analysis is way off because the Democratic Party doesn't do things for black people, and black people know that. And they didn't come out against Israel. They didn't allow a Palestinian person to speak at the convention. They didn't come out against the death penalty. They don't do a single payer. They say all these things, but they never do anything. So when people say the Republicans follow through, that's true, because they put these catastrophic policies, but that's what they said they want to do, and they do it. The Democrats don't do anything. So your analysis is way off, and people are much smarter than what you all kind of propose that they do. And a person's vote belongs to them. A person's vote doesn't belong to any candidate. So if people choose not to vote for whoever they don't want to vote for, that's why people need to vote for ranked choice voting in D.C. And that's why people across the country are clamoring for ranked choice voting, so they can choose who they really want to vote for.
I appreciate you calling, and forgive me for cutting off. We've got three callers, and we need to be done with the segment in 13 minutes. So forgive me for let's just have a little airing here before we get a response from Marcus Bachelor. Next caller, where you're calling from and your question or comment, please.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling from Southern Maryland. I just have a general question about how Kamala Harris ended up on the ticket as the Democratic nominee for president, because I thought that the primary was shuffled around to exclude New Hampshire as the first primary state, and then they moved it to South Carolina. For some reason, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden, I'm not sure why Joe Biden is no longer on the ticket any longer. It wasn't really explained. So if you could explain that, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Great. I appreciate you calling. Why don't we get a response from Marcus Bachelor to those two questions, if you would, real briefly, because we are short on time.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks to everyone who called in. I'll take the last question first. So in terms of the primary calendar, the Democrats decided after, I think, years of reflection and even protest among some of the Democratic rank and file, that the schedule of states didn't necessarily reflect the diversity of the party, that by starting in states like Iowa and New Hampshire and really giving candidates who can do well in those wider areas doesn't necessarily reflect broader support among the Democratic electorate later in line. And so the Democratic Party decided to start earlier with states like South Carolina, which reflect more the diversity of America. In terms of the second statement around Republicans delivering, I think if we say that it's true that Republicans deliver, they have delivered. They've delivered on policies that have been fundamentally detrimental to the Black community over the last four decades. So when they say they're going to give tax breaks to the rich, that's exactly what they do. When they say that they're going to invest in trickle-down economics that never trickles down, that's what they do. When they say they're going to break up workers' rights and break up the right for people to organize in their workplaces, that's exactly what they do. Now, the question about whether we're going to get all that we want, either as a community or as individual voters, because the caller is right, our votes are our individual votes. You know, yeah, we don't get everything we want, especially on every policy issue with every candidate. But I think, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez explained it pretty clearly a couple days ago. The question is about who you would rather argue with after this election. Would you rather argue with Kamala Harris and Tim Walz about the gaps in your values, or would you rather argue with an autocrat like Donald Trump, who will never relinquish power, who will never give ground on an issue, and quite frankly is pretty backwards on issues that impact Black and brown communities? So, yes, we've got a lot of work to do after Election Day to make sure we get all that we deserve, single-payer voter rights, ranked choice voting, all of those things. But the question on November 5th is who you would rather do that work with over the next 4 years. And I would rather do that work with Kamala Harris.
Right, right. Let's take a quick fundraising break. I'm so excited that people are chiming in. This is Community Watch and Comment, and we're getting the comments. That's what this show is about. And I'm going to make this brief as I can, because I know you obviously are interested in the subject and are chiming in. And by the way, I think we have at least one more caller. Hold on, I'll get right to you after the fundraising break. But this is community radio. We want to give you a voice. We want to speak to issues that you're concerned about and give you an opportunity to chime in. And that's just what's happening today. I'm so pleased. So please show the love. 202-588-9739 is the number to call. You can go online, wpfwfm.org. PayPal's an option on our website. We've got Cash App, $WPFWFM. Got a $500 goal. We're not cracking it, folks. We need you to step up and support Community Watch and Comment. Support the community resource that is WPFW. Great talk, great music. Show the love, folks. What do you have to say for yourself, Mr. Stapp?
I was just going to say, I feel people on the charged opinions on this, especially. Like, I feel like I often feel the same way. And, you know, this is the outlet that you have within your community to be able to express those things. So if you feel strongly about this topic and you felt enough the urge to call in, I think it's a perfect time to contribute as well to not only the conversation, but to making sure that the conversation continues to be on air in the same way, because there's no other station like WPFW in our area, and we need to keep WPFW sustained and strong.
Wonderful. Well put, Larry. Appreciate it. Let's get back to our show. I think we've got another caller. You've got a brief comment or question, your name, if you like, where you're calling from. So great you're chiming in.
Yes, sir. My name is L.P. Solomon, calling from Southeast Washington, D.C. I appreciate you taking my call. Also, I appreciate this conversation you distinguished gentlemen are having. The first thing I would like to say is that brothers, young brothers, and young sisters, they need to look, actually research Kamala Harris's record. And the things she's done for the Black community as a district attorney and as an attorney general out in California. Also, I would like to say that you have to have a seat at the table. If you don't have a seat at the table, then you're not going to get fed. You can't eat if you're not at the table. And with Donald Trump, you're not even going to be in the zip code. You're not going to be in the city where they're having the dinner. At least with Kamala Harris, you're going to have a seat at the table. Also, with these young brothers, yes,
the Republicans always follow through, like the gentleman was saying. That's why they need to read that Project 2025. That's why so many of these white people are coming out and voting with her, and these Republicans also, because they read it. And they wouldn't give a dog if it was just about black people, but they see it's about them too. They see it's about white folks. So they say, like, wait a minute, this guy is crazy. So understand this.
Yep.
That's why they're supporting him. They need to, you need to read that Project 2025, because if that's not Jim Crow, I don't know what is. And it's Calvin.
Yeah, right. We're running out of time. I appreciate you calling, and forgive me for cutting you short, but we're very close to the end of this interview, and wanted to get back to Marcus Batchelor and his thoughts on what the caller is saying and how we can move forward.
I think that's a really important observation in that the Republican Party, Donald Trump, is making very clear what he wants to do in the election, and it's not to the benefit of our community. Project 2025 is a real blueprint for what they want to do with a second term in the White House. They are determined that they will not let a second opportunity slip away to do all the things that they wanted to do the first time, from ending, Obamacare, to, taking away a woman's reproductive right to choose, to gutting voting rights. All of these things are written down, and that should alarm us. But I think it's equally important that we also, as a Democratic Party, write down what we want to do, which is, again, why I'm so encouraged that the vice president is doing things like the opportunity agenda for black men. And while, some of us might have wished those conversations had happened sooner, I said in my op-ed, I think it's worth all of us as a community listening now, because the stakes could not be higher, right? I think, a lot of folks, this is not about nibbling around the edges, or trying to stick the middle finger up at the system. The stakes in this election are deadly serious. It's about the opportunity to get all the things right that we want to get right, or not having that opportunity again. And we've got to do that. So we've got to take action. We've got to make sure we're registered to vote. I know my brother Larry over in Maryland knows early voting starts this week in the state. And so there's so much that we've got to do right now to make sure that we're prepared. So for me, go to people4.org/vote. Make sure you're registered. Make sure your friends are registered. Make sure you know where your polling location is, and make your voice heard.
Yep. We should say, if I'm not mistaken, you in fact have thrown your hat in the ring, as it were, and you're running for at large in D.C. If you could just touch briefly on that, and also I'm curious, in the remaining couple of minutes that we have, what you think about Initiative 83. So if you could address those two questions, I'd be quite curious.
Oh, you're pulling me into the local stuff, huh, David? No, I am a proud native Washingtonian here in D.C., and like you said, David, I've been a candidate for the D.C. Council, also spent 4 years representing Ward 8 on the State Board of Education, as well as an advisory neighborhood commissioner. We've got a really exciting local election coming up ahead of us, in which I'm not on the ballot, so don't look out for me. But on the initiative on ranked choice voting, I've always been a proponent of the idea of ranked choice voting. I think more than changing the method of how voters vote, because I think that difference is a little inconsequential. I really do think it changes the way, as a former candidates campaign. And two callers earlier were from Southeast D.C., and so we know firsthand that in some citywide elections, we might not get touched at all for, those politicians that have already got their 30 or 40% locked away. Ranked choice voting really opens up the opportunity for more candidates to engage more voters. And so I think that it's a really interesting opportunity I think D.C. is going to have before us if the initiative passes. And if I had to predict, I think it will.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think it'll pass. But Initiative 83 also provides for the opportunity for independent voters to vote in party primaries. So, for example, an independent voter would be allowed to vote in the Democratic Party primary. Your thoughts on that in terms of the opportunity that Initiative 83 would provide in that regard?
Yeah, it was an interesting addition to the initiative. I know other states do it, allow independent voters to participate in whichever primary they choose at the top of the year. And I think it's probably, I think it's a worthy solution to, I think, a hyper-local problem that we have in that in D.C., the Democratic primary really is the show for the most part. And that our leaders really do get chosen in the Democratic primary. And so, you know, for those voters who, you know, have chosen to not claim a party, to choose to participate in one or another, is an interesting solution to that. So yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm sure the council will have fun with that in the months after the initiative passes, if it does. But yeah, it should be an interesting next few weeks.
Indeed, that's the entertainment of the moment. I think we can say there's a Chinese curse that says, "May you live in interesting times," and I think we are sufficiently cursed right now. Living certainly in interesting times. We're going to have to end it there. So great having you. I've been speaking with People for the American Way's National Political Director, Marcus Batchelor. Thank you very much for all you're doing and for joining us today.
Thanks so much for all you're doing and support WPFW, y'all. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate your support. Thank you so much. So what do you think, Larry Stafford? Interesting topic, a meaty topic, and I should say we're nowhere. We need you guys to step up, our dear listening audience. We're not cracking our goal here. We need some help. 202-588-9739, WPFWFM.org. What do you think, Larry Stafford?
Now, I think you know, one aspect that we haven't covered is, particularly, like, it's an overall shift among men towards the right, not feeling like there is a home on the left as much for men. I think it's happening in many places, not just the United States, and certainly not just with Black men overall.
Right.
I was glad to see men, you know, calling in this morning particularly and being engaged. I do also hope that, you know, listeners of WPFW who are men can make a strong donation as well, right? But I think it's an underexplored area as far as, like, why is the shift happening? Why are men more interested in politics like Trump's or, you know, like, not aligning with left parties or mainstream left parties, at least in many parts of the world?
Right. I mean, it's all relative. 70% of Black male voters in this country are supporting Kamala Harris. So it's the change. You know, it was 85% African American males voting for Biden in 2020. So there's a marked change, and there's a difference, a gender gap, as we said, between Black men and Black women. But as you said, you know, there's a gender gap with white folks too. It's probably even more severe. I don't know the exact numbers with Trump. So it's an important and fascinating issue and a little bit scary. And you're going to hear it discussed here on WPFW-FM. Please show the love, 202-588-9739, or go online, WPFWFM.org. And I want to move on to our next important guest, as soon as I get to my notes here, of course. That would be handy. With a couple of exceptions, J.D. Vance in his vice presidential debate with Tim Walz came off as fairly reasonable, even fair-minded, some would say, clearly gunning for relatively moderate, undecided voters. but there's someone influencing Vance who's anything but moderate. Blogger Curtis Scarvin believes that democracy is outmoded. It would be far better off with a benevolent dictator, a monarchy, if you will. It sounds like some crazy conspiracy kind of thing along the lines of Trump deep state musings. But J.D. Vance admits that he's, quote, plugged into a lot of weird right-wing subcultures. And note that no matter what happens on November 5th, Vance is running for president in 2028. He's going to be around for a while. And joining us to talk about this very real threat is Chris Lehman, the Nation Magazine D.C. Bureau Chief. Welcome, sir, to Community Watch and Comment.
Thanks very much for having me. Very glad to be here. I'm a big fan of WPFW.
Oh, wonderful. Appreciate you listening. Before we look at Curtis Garvin and Vance, let's throw in a third name. Tell us who Peter Thiel is.
Well, he is sort of the man behind the curtain in many respects. He is an original investor of Facebook, was involved with Elon Musk in the founding of PayPal, and he is, like Curtis Garvin, an anti-democratic reactionary figure. He has written that he doesn't believe that democracy and capitalism are compatible in the long term, and he's certainly put his money where his mouth is. He was the principal funder of Vance's successful 2022 run for the Senate. I think he threw about $30 million into that effort via super PACs. He is part of this, you know, people who are old like me have, you know, a memory of the sort of callow utopianism that greeted the arrival of the internet in the 1990s. And it was all this, you know, how can I characterize it on the radio? Unsubstantiated claim, shall we say, that information wants to be free, and this was going to be a radical democratizing age where citizens would be able to directly interact with their leaders, and people would be held accountable in new ways, and information would gush forward and make everything more, small d democratic. And we now know that was complete delusion. You know, we incubated this whole, cohort of platform billionaires like Elon Musk, like Mark Zuckerberg, and like Peter Thiel, who have at best a transactional relationship with democracy, and at worst are, like Peter Thiel and Curtis Garvin, deeply reactionary figures who have immense power and influence. And J.D. Vance is their mouthpiece. He is very deeply interested in the ideas of these figures, and has, promulgated, sort of soft-focused versions of their ideology, prior to becoming Trump's nominee. And as you noted in the debate, he was sort of putting forward his more, kind of genial centrist shtick. But anyone who's followed Vance's career knows that he is, deeply embedded with these characters. So.
Yeah. I mean, just, I think it's worth reiterating what Thiel said. And Thiel is, we probably would not know of J.D. Vance, but for Peter Thiel, I think we can say you set him up in business and got him away from being a lawyer. And right. As you said, serious millions of dollars for Vance to win the Ohio Senate race. And I think Thiel was very instrumental in Trump choosing Vance to be his running mate, if I'm not mistaken. Right? Do I have that right? I believe.
Yeah, no, just adding Elon Musk into this, fetid mix.
Because, you've got this incredible convergence of Citizens United you know, any amount of money is okay. You know, they can throw in $30 million. What Musk is throwing in, you know, in the last quarter, what, $75 million? Got this incredible convergence of, you know, open-ended spending buying elections. Literally now, Musk is talking about, what, $1 million if you register, which is potentially under investigation, right?
Right, right. It is definitely, you know, we're seeing, you know, this, again, this cohort of Silicon Valley billionaires pushing us into the sphere of a plutocracy.
And then you've got a major party candidate, namely Trump, who's completely transactional. And you can look at, you know, he's flipped on his position on TikTok. He's flipped on his position on Bitcoins. And it's all about who's giving him the do-re-mi. It's a very frightening convergence. It's called, you know, oligarchy, I think, is for lack of a better word.
No, it's absolutely true. And, you know, in the background are these figures like Curtis Yarvin, who are, you know, very frank. You know, they say democracy is a failure and that we need a benevolent dictator or a monarchy in some cases to, you know, guide the American political system to its appointed path of basically maximum capitalist and big donor influence, which is, you know, as you've noted, we're pretty far down that path already. And, you know, we're also at a moment where, you know, any, you know, even, you know, neutral, impartial interlocutors have to acknowledge that Donald Trump is losing it. You know, he is not following the plot at his own events. You know, he is unable to sort of give basic coherent replies to questions about his economic policy. So then the question becomes, like, if Trump wins in, you know, 15 days, it's going to be a J.D. Vance presidency. And that opens up, you know, all kinds of very dark scenarios where Elon Musk, you know, that's the reason Elon Musk is shoveling all this money at Trump, because his chosen vice presidential pick will be running the country. And, you know, Trump has already pledged he'll make Musk the czar of government efficiency and give him the authority to hack away at the very regulatory agencies that are now overseeing, you know, his vast industrial and financial holdings. So,
I mean, at least you think, oh, this, you know, Vance is only going to be Trump. Trump wins. Vance is only going to be his vice president, won't have much influence. Trump is certainly not going to stoop to the York and dictatorial tendency. This is a quote from, late July. I don't understand why the Harris campaign hasn't, made more about it. Last summer, Trump urged a group of evangelicals to, quote, vote. Just this time, you won't have to do it anymore. 4 more years, you know what? It'll be fixed. It'll be fine. In 4 years, you don't have to vote again. We'll have it fixed. So good. You won't, you're not going to have to vote. I mean, and then I think he was on Fox the next week, and commentator on Fox gave him an opportunity to walk it back, and he doubled down. I mean, this was not a one-off. Your thought, Chris Layman, I mean, this is blinking red lights, and I don't know if you necessarily need J.D. Vance and Yarkin. I mean, Trump obviously has these tendencies anyway.
Yeah, no, he is, you know, going way back in his career. He was, you know, an understudy of Roy Cohn, who was Joe McCarthy's henchman, who has a brutally transactional vision of politics that is money-driven and has no use for democratic mores. Trump is, in fact, you know, his first wife said he kept a copy of Mein Kampf by his bed. He admires authoritarian leaders, not just Putin you know, the sort of strongmen who are out there today, like Viktor Orban, but Hitler himself. And so, Yeah, even in a scenario where Trump is all there, which he's clearly not, he is advancing a direct assault on democratic governance in this country. So, and again, you know, figures like Vance are kind of the ideological hardcore of the MAGA movement today, and they're going to be involved in translating, you know, what Trump has done into a much more ambitious, ideologically disciplined, long-term governing project. And yeah, I agree. This should be ringing alarms across the media sphere, but that's the topic for another segment.
Indeed. You know, we're going to for sure have you back, Chris Layman, because like I said, no matter what, J.D. Vance is running in 2028, one way or the other, and we need to be well advised and aware of what's going on here. You know, I think if someone has a real quick comment, please chime in just very quick. If you'd like to chime in, 202-588-0893. Talk about Curtis Garvin, the whisper in Vance's ear. He's talking about purging the cathedral. Have you written about this, Chris Layman? If you could talk about that.
Yeah, no, this is, you know, Yarvin was an early exponent of sort of reactionary and fascist ideology in Silicon Valley. And it's all grounded in this, you know, Elon Musk is sort of the cartoonish version of this. But this idea that, you know, there's a vast, you know, sort of covert liberal cabal that has captured lead institutions in American life, the media, the university, you know, the federal bureaucracy. And Yarvin calls this the cathedral. It's, you know, this kind of conspiratorial phantasm that he's conjured up as a straw man, basically, because, you know, I've just to take one example, I've worked in the media my entire professional life. And believe me, you know, the forces of sort of capitalist accommodation are much more powerful than any liberal ideology. Most political reporters are kind of intellectually incurious, I'll say, and centrist, and certainly in economic policy. So this whole notion is just a make-believe fantasy, in my professional experience, that, you know, the press is some manufactory of liberal ideology. But it's a useful fiction for figures like Yarvin, who basically want to, you know, clear the detritus of democracy off the board. So obviously an independent press is a threat to that project, obviously. And a university system that is not sort of beholden to an ideological movement is a threat to that project. Obviously, a sort of, you know, competent federal regulatory system is a deep threat, as we've seen in the case of Musk and others, to that project. So, yeah, Curtis Yarvin, you know, he's kind of a buffoon in certain, as an intellectual presence. He's not a serious thinker, but he has managed to position himself into this point, into the point where he's got, you know, the sort of attention of the vice presidential nominee for the Republican Party, and, you know, and Peter Thiel, who is the sort of money man behind Vance. So, yeah, you know, again, I've been saying this since 2016, and, you know, been disregarded by so-called serious thinkers. But, you know, there is no reason not to call this a fascist movement. They're not interested in democracy. They're not interested in anything other than a strongman vision of power. They're not interested in a political economy that answers to the needs of ordinary people. You know, it walks and talks like a duck, so call it a duck.
Right. And even what I never can pronounce his name, Milley, former Joint Chief of Staff, Milley, said, is it, or is it Miley, whatever, I mean, he's calling. What's that? He's calling a Trump a fascist. It's extraordinary. You're breaking up, Chris. One more time.
It is, again, like, you know, for those of us who have been saying this for 2016, it's, you know, a kind of sober vindication that, you know, people in key influences of power who have worked very closely with Trump are saying what we've been saying for 9 years. But I'm glad that, you know, that message is finally getting some traction.
Yep. And we need to get you back. We haven't even dipped into history, well documented, I guess, that he appeared to be not just a fascist, but an out-and-out racist. I mean, it's extraordinary. Yeah. Slavery is a natural human relationship akin to that of patron and client. That's one quote from Garvin. This is the blogger that's got the ear of a very serious politician on the national scene, J.D. Vance. We're going to have to end it there. I've been speaking with The Nation magazine's D.C. bureau chief, Chris Lehman. Thank you so much for being with us. We'll get you back on.
Okay. Thanks much.
Really appreciate it. And what do you think, Larry Stafford? I think this is relevant programming, and we need your support. We're not getting it, folks. We're not cracking our goal in any shape or form. We need your help. What do you think, Larry Stafford?
Yeah, I think that people should absolutely be giving their support to WPFW. Again, this is listener supported radio. It is member driven radio. Like, this station actually has a board comprised of members and leaders from our community that make decisions about the programming that you hear every single day. And none of that is possible without the investment and input of listeners like yourself. If you are not a member of WPFW and have not joined yet, and even if you have, even if you have joined, that's even more reason to give to WPFW today. We only come around every once in a while asking for your contribution to this great station, and today is one of those days. I hope that somebody out there could drop at least $25 towards the programming that you heard today.
Right, and it's particularly imperative right now because we are looking to move, get off of K Street, and it's always a challenge to keep the lights on, but now it's particularly challenging because, you know, it takes some do-re-mi for anybody to move, but when you're talking about a radio station, that's some serious stuff. The actual physical moving of the equipment, setting up a new shop, it's expensive, folks. These are particularly difficult, challenging times for the community resource that is WPFW. We need you to step up, 202-588-9739. You can also go online, wpfwfm.org. We offer PayPal when you go online. We've also got a Cash App option, $WPFWFM. We've got a $500 goal. We are not there, folks. Please show the love. Please show the support. We need your help right now. We particularly appreciate sustainers. It gives us some sense of income coming in over the long term. You know, whatever you can give, you know, give up 3 lattes a month and show some love for WPFW. And we would really be thrilled if we can get some new members here. So any closing thoughts in the 30 seconds we have left, Larry Stafford?
Just hearing both of these conversations, you know, early voting started in Maryland 24th. I think it begun in many places around the country. And yeah, so definitely get out and vote. I mean, such critical things are on the line, both nationally and at the local level. So make sure you're paying attention to that and donating to WPFW, of course.
Wonderful. And check out Larry's the director of Progressive Maryland, wonderful organization. Keep tabs on his website. That's going to do it for our show. Thanks to the amazing Mike Nocella for getting us through with his engineering expertise. And thanks to Mackenzie Olson for his ideas for this show. Much appreciated. Coming up, the WPFW News headlines. David Westhead's on tomorrow at 11. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Dave Rabin. Stay safe. Have a good week.
Scott Baba for Pacifica Radio. Israeli airstrikes in and around Beirut have caused significant damage to the country's largest public hospital and killed more than a dozen people. Hezbollah on Tuesday launched a barrage of rockets into central Israel hours before U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken arrived in the region. Lebanon's health ministry said that 57 people also were wounded in airstrikes late Monday that destroyed several buildings facing the Rafik Hariri University Hospital, located on the outskirts of southern Beirut. The Israeli military said it struck a Hezbollah target. The family of a Guatemalan journalist celebrated his transfer to house arrest following his jailing for more than 2 years amid his daily newspaper's anti-corruption investigations. Jose Ruben Zamora, who founded El Periodico, which specialized in anti-corruption reporting and closed a year ago, walked out of jail over the weekend. Judge Eric Garcia Alvarado had ruled Friday that Zamora should be released because his preventative arrest in one of the cases had already expired. Zamora had been in prison since July of 2022 when he was charged with money laundering amounting to around $38,000. And in June of 2023, he was sentenced to 6 years in prison. The sentence was overturned by an appeals court because of errors in the process, but he's waiting to see if he will be granted a retrial. Zamora spoke to reporters as he left prison on Saturday.
And I think they're going to try to lock me up again. And I want you to be certain that it may be that they are bluffing or it may be true. And if they are going to bring me back, I will wait for them at my house again, and I will come back here. I think that kind of actions are affecting them, not me.
India and China have agreed on a border pact that will see both sides coordinating their patrolling routines to try and avoid any escalating tensions. The move is being hailed as a significant step towards normal bilateral relations after the two sides were involved in a skirmish in 2020. Ishan Garg reports.
Reports say the border pact gives patrolling rights to both armies in two contested areas. It's expected to restore some goodwill between the two armies. Much of the India-China border is not demarcated, and that has led to border disputes in many areas in the Himalayan region. It's also expected that the two sides will eventually scale down their military presence in the disputed region. The development comes just a day before Prime Minister Narendra Modi's visit to Russia for the BRICS summit, where he is expected to meet President Xi Jinping. And now analysts say there's every possibility that relations between the two Asian giants could finally move towards normalization.
It's 2 weeks before Election Day, and former President Donald Trump and Vice President Kamala Harris have been hitting the campaign trail in strategic battleground states. Donna Warder filed this report.
Thank you to Pennsylvania. We love Pennsylvania.
It's good to be back in Pennsylvania.
Former President Donald Trump and Vice President Kamala Harris have been laser focused on Pennsylvania, a crucial swing state. Pennsylvania's 19 electoral votes is the largest prize of the most important swing states. Voters like Brian Neal of Chester County know how important they are.
Half of my friends are voting for Kamala, and the other half are voting for Trump. So if that's any indication, then I think it's a pretty tight race here.
Fernwood Yost is poll director at Franklin and Marshall College in Lancaster, PA.
Pennsylvanians know that this is a key state. They're hearing it, they're seeing it. It's being demonstrated by the visits and by the advertising. So it'll mean that we have higher turnout than other places that don't get as much attention.
Early voting already has begun in Pennsylvania, and Yost says voters for both candidates are equally motivated. I'm Donna Warder.
Some of the most visible demonstrations on college campuses this fall have involved professors speaking up for the right to protest itself. After the pro-Palestinian tent encampments swept campuses last spring, colleges rolled out new restrictions on when and how demonstrations are allowed. To faculty, new protest rules threaten freedom of speech and the freedom to think, both central to university life. Faculty members at colleges around the country have pushed back